Friends, since the terrorist attacks in Paris recently, and then closer home in San Bernardino, California, it does not take too long in a conversation for people to begin to talk about what's going on in the world. In fact, very quickly, at least in my conversations, people have often said, "What's going on? The world is in a mess. Or what are we coming to?" Right? And perhaps I'm not wrong in saying that the mood seems a little dull these days. Sure, we are trying to keep things as normal as we can. Look at us, look at the gifts. It shows that things are okay. But at the back of our minds, it's like there's a fear lurking. Yes, these are very, very difficult days. And then you come to church, and we open the door for the Jubilee of Mercy. Today is Gaudete Sunday, Rejoice Sunday, Joyful Sunday. And at least in my mind, the prevalent mood and what the church is announcing today, a little bit at odds. So as I was reflecting on the readings and writing this homily, the one simple question that I ask myself is, what does Gaudete Sunday mean for us now, in these days? So in many ways, my homily is an answer to that question. And I wouldn't quite call these three practical implications. I'm going to call them 3 points for reflection. Gaudete Sunday in our times. Let's talk about joy for a moment. Joy is being proposed in today's readings as a promise. You probably already have guessed that the mood for Gaudete Sunday or Rejoice Sunday comes from today's first and second reading. Zephaniah says, and see if you can feel it inside of you. Zephaniah says, "Shout for joy, O daughter, O Zion, daughter Zion. Sing joyfully, O Israel. Be glad and exult with all your heart, O daughter Jerusalem." And then Paul in today's second reading says, "Rejoice in the Lord always. I shall say it again, rejoice." But why? What's the reason for the invitation to rejoice? Zephaniah gives us the answer. He says, "The Lord has removed the judgment against you." Don't be surprised with the word judgment being there. It's purposeful. "The Lord has removed the judgment against you. The Lord your God is in your midst." In other words, Zephaniah too was writing at a time when the mood was not very high. Infidelities to the covenant and tremendous injustices in society. These were the two things. And the prophets always cried out against the social injustices of the time and infidelities of the people, and especially the rulers, to the covenant. So even as Zephaniah says, "Shout for joy," he's actually promising joy. This joy is imminent. It's not here yet. In fact, Zephaniah, the entire book, is only 3 chapters. The part that we read today is the good part. What comes before that is God's absolute disgust at what's going on in society. The Lord feels sad, and judgment is proclaimed. In other words, folks, joy is a promise, but it would require conversion. Joy doesn't just fall and everything stays the same. Joy is a promise, but it requires conversion. So, in my second point, let me talk about conversion just a little bit more. Zephaniah's proclamation that the Lord has removed his judgment is not an undemanding proposition. It's not as if we don't have to do anything. And here is the biggest misunderstanding. Sometimes people misunderstand God's compassion and mercy. Is God merciful? Sure it is. God is. Is God kind? Sure God is. Is God's love without limits? Sure it is. No doubt about it. But God does not simply remove our judgments to make us feel good. Okay, come on, I want you to feel, make no changes. I just want you to feel good. In other words, as I say it, God's mercy and compassion is not like massage therapy. It's not. Religion makes just and honest demands on us. Religion demands conversion. See, our relationship with God is like any other relationship. Those of you who are married, I'm a priest. Your marriage is only going to be as good as the amount of work you're going to put into it. My priesthood is only as good as the amount of work I put into my priesthood. I can't expect it to be good if I don't work at it. And this is true of all areas of life, isn't it? You can't live carelessly and expect your finances to be healthy. Not possible. You can't expect to live selfishly and expect your family to be happy. You can't continue to disrespect other people and then expect to receive respect. These things don't happen. In today's gospel, John is announcing, like Zephaniah, the coming of Christ. But then people come to him and say, "What shall we do?" That's the question. What shall we do? John doesn't say, "Stay where you are, and the Lord is in your midst." John says, "Prepare." And they say, "What shall we do?" And what does John say to them? Very practical things, very real things. Whoever has two cloaks should share with the person who has none. Whoever has food should do likewise. To the tax collectors, he said, "Stop collecting more than what is prescribed." To the soldiers, he said, "Do not practice extortion. Do not falsely accuse anyone and be satisfied with your wages." In other words, John was saying that joy can be theirs, but it will require conversion. People cannot take God's mercy for granted. Is it there? Yes. But we can't take it for granted. This is God's mercy. We can't expect to make no changes and experience joy. Conversion is an integral part of joy. Thirdly, I want to talk about joy as the experience of God's mercy, the experience of God's mercy and the living out of God's mercy. In other words, joy comes when I become like God in the mercy that I share, okay? So last Tuesday, Pope Francis opened the doors to the Vatican and inaugurated the Jubilee of Mercy. And we did the same here this morning. I'm so glad that you and I could be part of that. Pope Francis has declared not just a year of mercy, but a Jubilee of Mercy. A Jubilee calls for celebration. And Pope Francis truly wants people to experience the joy of God's mercy. In other words, Pope Francis is saying that God is first and foremost about love and compassion and mercy. That's God's nature. God is first and foremost about love and compassion and mercy. And he's also saying that the church's first responsibility, like that of Jesus, is to be the face of the Father's mercy. Our job is to be the face of the Father's mercy. Now, because Pope Francis talks about mercy and compassion and not being judgmental and all, everybody loves Pope Francis. Is that true? I mean, if something happened to him, I would be devastated. Right? He has just made God so accessible. And yet, I think he's misunderstood. Because the Pope, while he proclaims the mercy of God, is also asking us to change the way we conduct world affairs. So, for example, he's asking us to change the way we take care of our planet. Do we have to convert? Is conversion needed? Sure it is. But how many people love Pope Francis, but not the message? Whereas many people are treating refugees unjustly, he's asking parishes to be merciful and compassionate and take them in. He's asking parishes in Europe to adopt families. And how many people are treating refugees today like filth? Whereas many political figures are engaging in hate speech, Pope Francis, in the light of the threat of terrorism, is calling people for intensified inter-religious conversation. This Pope is a Pope of dialogue. In visiting countries, the Pope visits not only the government and religious leaders, but he visits the prisons, the orphanages, the slums, and the sick. The Pope is not just doing this because it'll make him look good. He's making a statement. He really cares, but I think he's also saying, and he's reminding the economic systems in the world, that society is only as well as the weakest person in it. When presidents go to countries and heads of states go to, they don't visit prisons and slums. The Pope does. What is he saying? Your society, your country is only as good as the weakest person in it. Coming back to this whole issue of terrorism, so many irresponsible statements made. Most global leaders think about terrorism as a problem. And we are reeling under it. And sociologists are telling us that terrorism is only the symptom of deeper issues. As long as you treat terrorism as a problem and don't deal with the symptoms, we're not going to get rid of this. But who's listening? At least the media polls seem to indicate the divisive, discriminatory, bigoted, and partisan politics is more popular than Pope Francis's message of mercy. Joy will be ours, like Zephaniah said. The promise of joy is imminent and real. But the question we have to ask is, if that joy needs to be ours, what should I do? What should we do? I think there needs to be an entire paradigm shift in the way we address global issues and world problems. But I don't know. I so want to experience the joy that Jesus came to bring us. But who is listening to Jesus? I so want mercy to be our experience. Who is listening? I so want us to celebrate the third Sunday of Advent without a cloud hanging over our head. But who is listening? May the joy of Christ be ours, but because we have responded to the call for mercy. People of God said,